This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, what we are going to talk about is something that perhaps you haven't given much thought about. It's the importance of having adequate uninsured and underinsured motorist insurance coverage. Most of us probably haven't thought much about that, and we're going to talk about it on this program and tell you why you should think about it. My guests are personal injury attorneys Casey Kaufman of the Brandy Law Firm in San Francisco and Shahana Angela Rahman, whose offices are in San Francisco. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the San Mateo County Bar Association. Additional funding is provided by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and by the Family Law Section of the State Bar. And Casey and Shahana, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Very nice to have you here. Why don't you, Casey, do this? Start us off with what is uninsured motorist, what is underinsured motorist?
Sure. Uninsured motorist and underinsured motorist coverage is auto insurance that you could buy to protect yourself. Essentially, we all know that the state of California requires people to have liability insurance, which means if you're at fault for an accident, you need to be covered to a low level, but you need to be covered to protect the for the injuries of the other person. Underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage is something that you can do to protect yourself. And we feel like it's very important to let people know that this is an option for them. And too many people come into our office that don't have this type of coverage, which it could really help them.
One of the statistics that you provided me with in getting prepared for this program is that, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, 25% of the motorists in California are uninsured.
That's true. That's true. We got that from the California Department of Insurance. Insurance is expensive. And the most predominant reason that people gave for not having insurance was because they couldn't afford it, which is understandable.
And we see that all the time in our practice. As the economy got worse, more and more people stopped having insurance. And so you'd see more people that was the first thing to go.
One of the things under California law is you have to have a minimum insurance coverage, and this is required. This is law. If you are a licensed driver, California law requires that you have this minimum insurance of $15,000 liability per person or $30,000 for an entire accident. There could be 10 persons who are injured, but you are protected, or at least your policy, if you're the one at fault, will protect you up to $30,000 for all these people, right?
That's correct.
Now, the people who have been injured, the 10 people, and let's say their injuries are very significant, $30,000 isn't going to do anything for them.
Even if their injuries are not significant, even if they're moderate injuries, broken arm or hurt shoulder, you have more than one or two people involved, $30,000 doesn't go very far.
I mean, today on National Public Radio, they were talking about some gentleman who actually went abroad to have a hip replacement, and how it was to cost, or it actually cost him, and he did some research on this, $13,000. This is on Terry Gross, by the way. Whereas the person that Terry was interviewing said that in the United States, it would cost probably at least a little over $100,000.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So in other words, what you're trying to do, and Casey, you suggested to me several weeks ago doing this program, is impressing upon people that even if you have the lowest amount of liability coverage, the 15 or 30, probably your uninsured motorist coverage is even lower than that to protect yourself. Am I right on that or not?
Well, it's usually the same.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. It's right. Usually the same, but the problem is that people don't understand that that's just not enough.
Yeah.
It's just not enough. You can't always know what's going to happen to you out there. You can't figure that out until you're there, and you don't want to be looking back on a situation where you had an opportunity to protect yourself and get insurance that protects you if the person doesn't have enough funds in case you're injured.
One of the things that I have found very interesting, Shahana, is that your practice seems to have a lot of people who have been injured riding a bicycle, Would you tell us a little bit about that and the relationship between them and uninsured motorist or underinsured motorist coverage?
Right. A lot of my clients are bicycle riders, and some of them use their bicycles as their sole means of transportation. However, what people don't know is that if you're on a bicycle and you're hit by a motorist, and that motorist either doesn't have enough insurance or has no insurance, if you have an auto policy on your regular car, you are covered in the event you're hit on your bicycle mm-hmm. by your automobile policy. Mm-hmm. So I often tell my clients, even if they don't have a car at all, to buy a policy of insurance so that they have some coverage and have underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage on that policy.
Apparently today a lot of people are acquiring policies on the Internet. What basic recommendations do you have for them in terms of most people don't know or haven't appreciated the potential problem that they may have if they are hit by somebody who has no insurance or somebody who is underinsured? They may not realize that they are subject to very significant financial problems if they have themselves not enough uninsured motorist coverage or underinsured motorist coverage.
Sure, and we should explain the difference.
Please do, if you would.
Uninsured motorist is that 25% number that you talked about early, mm-hmm. where the person that hits you just does not have insurance.
Yeah.
Underinsured motorist coverage is where the person has insurance, but not enough to cover your injuries, mm-hmm. your time off of work, your emotional distress, etc. And so the number is much higher when you factor in the underinsured situation. And it just, what we impress upon people is that it just does not take a significant injury for this to be an issue for you.
But the other thing we should say is we talked about the minimum limits that you're required to have by law, which is a $15,000 per person, $30,000 per accident policy. That's the minimum financial responsibility law. But policies are sold in increments. So if you don't have a $15,000 policy, the next level is generally $25,000, $50,000, or $100,000. And then they get higher, $250,000, $500,000, and a million. So there are no statistics that we found anyway about how many people are driving around with can be considered a small policy, a $25,000 or $50,000 policy. So when people go to purchase insurance, whether on the Internet or through a broker or any sort of forum, what they have to do is sort of do a self-evaluation of how much insurance coverage they would need to protect themselves if they were injured by someone else.
Mm-hmm.
What people do routinely is they buy insurance based on how much do I need to protect my car or mm-hmm. my property, mm-hmm. and how much do I need if I hurt somebody else.
Yes.
So the issue when people are not thinking about, what do I need to protect me? And that's the question.
And so you would want to put into that, if I can't work, what does that mean if I'm out of work for a few months, for
right.
example?
Right. If I'm hit by a car and I break my arm and I can't work for 6 months, how much money do I need mm-hmm. to compensate me or so I can live during mm-hmm. that period of time? Mm-hmm. If people think about it in that terms, they realize if they have $25,000 of uninsured motorist coverage, that might not be enough for them.
Yeah. I suppose certainly people who are applying for policies on the Internet, both of you, you've had a good number of years of experience, although you're still quite young. Still, you've been doing this for quite a few years and have had the experience of dealing with this. I take it there is nothing on the Internet that really gets into the nitty-gritty of insurance coverage that people can Google and try to find, you know?
Sure. Well, people usually do what they have to do.
Yeah.
It's the law. They know what the law is. You get your license, you get the insurance that you need, and you have your car, and you use it.
Mm-hmm.
What we've noticed is there's very little information out there given either by public entities or the insurance companies themselves about underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage.
Mm-hmm.
In our just personal experience, we've found that the rates for getting equivalent uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage for yourself is about a quarter of the bodily injury
mm-hmm.
rates. So it is relatively not more expensive but much less expensive to cover yourself. And for some reason, there is no source out there that is telling people, you should get this. It's very good for you. It's really good for you for if something bad happens.
So if someone had $1 million liability policy on them, that would protect someone else who they may have injured in an accident.
Correct.
This person who has $1 million liability policy, in case he or she was injured, may have uninsured motorist coverage if the other party has injured them of quite a low amount, comparatively speaking, to the $1 million liability.
Right. That's totally right. And that's why we're here. We're here to tell you the things that your insurance company doesn't tell you. And one of the things they don't tell you is that you should buy as much uninsured and underinsured motorist coverage as the limits of your policy that you buy if you injure someone else. And that information does not get passed on from insurance companies because it's not really a moneymaker for them. They're very low.
Because the rates are small, comparatively speaking.
Right, and the risk for them is
large. Interesting.
And a lot of insurance brokers, no one asks the question, and they don't volunteer the information. Most people that I encountered, clients and potential clients, when asked, you know, do you have uninsured motorist coverage, no one knows what that is because no one ever tells them, and it's not written. It's written in your policy way in the back in really fine print. It tells you sort of what it is, but it's not something that people know about.
Do you believe, since people have primarily younger people have become so into the internet and electronics. I mean, you walk down the street and most younger people have a cell phone in their hand or something they're looking at. No one seems who's generally younger seems to be walking naturally with hands down. There's usually something at the ear or they're looking at it and they could care less about anybody in front of them or whatever. What I'm wondering is, do you see today that the younger generation is so into electronics, an advantage to people who, let's say, are hearing you on this program and thinking to themselves, gee, I better look into this. Do you think there is an advantage to someone dealing with an agent or a broker to have someone to talk to? Or what recommendations do you have for somebody, and how do you go about it? As I mentioned to you off the program, I've been very much, this program has been very much involved in the early years, not with funding, but with guests and topics from NOLO Press. But as far as I know, NOLO Press, although it has covered so many, they were the big paper books, consumer books, has not covered anything with respect to insurance coverage. And, of course, if someone is out there and I'm wrong about this, I want you to call in and let me know. But so there's not, as far as I know, there's not some book to go to. I'm wondering what you both think about someone trying to get the benefit of, let's say, an experienced insurance broker or insurance agent to try to ask questions and try to get some answers in terms of what's best for me. What do you think, Shahana?
I think a broker can be very helpful, but I also think consumers need to arm themselves with the right questions. If you get an experienced broker, they can tailor your insurance to meet your needs. They'll ask you a series of questions, usually about, do you own a home? What's your income level? Do you expect to have a higher level of income? And these are questions designed to see what you have to protect. And if you have that sort of dialogue with your broker, that means your broker is interested in you and protecting you, and that can be very helpful. But I hear what you're saying. A lot of people want to do business on the internet now, and they don't want to have to talk to someone on the phone. And certainly you can buy insurance on the internet if you know what you're buying, what you're looking for, and what you want. But the downside of that is you don't have someone to talk to. So a broker can be helpful to answer questions.
I know when I called my broker because of Casey, you're suggesting I do this program with you and Shahana. And although I had a decent amount of uninsured motorist coverage, for example, I have a $5 million umbrella. My policy on my car, and because the umbrella expands the liability coverage on the car. I have $5 million liability coverage by way of the umbrella. But the regular insurance policy, liability insurance policy that I had was $500,000, $1 million. And I was told that for me to increase my uninsured motorist coverage, I would have to increase my liability coverage because I had $250,000, $500,000 uninsured motorist coverage. So I have increased it because of your alerting me to the concerns here.
Well, good. I'm glad you did, and I hope more people do.
But the interesting thing was, and I asked this question, because years ago I decided I wanted to have, I mean, I'm not a rich man. Some people say I am, but I'm not. I mean, here I am on public radio. I make next to nothing in doing this program because it's a labor of love that I have, and I am a deputy district attorney. I'm a servant of the people. But I have had felt, being a homeowner, that it was important to have an umbrella policy up to $5 million. And I was told today by my broker that the $5 million does not increase the uninsured motorist coverage. It has no connection to the uninsured motorist coverage whatsoever.
Right. And there's let me just point out also that we're talking about UM-UIM as two different coverages. They're usually the same coverage. They're not two separate things you have to ask for.
That's what I was told.
Yeah. And what you're talking about is also something that people aren't informed about. Umbrella policies do not need to have uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage, period. You have to ask for it, and you have to get a special rider attached to your umbrella policy to have that coverage. And what happens is people get pushed, particularly homeowners, people get pushed to lower auto limits and higher umbrellas because they're less expensive.
Yes.
But what they don't realize and what they are very rarely told is that they're losing, when they do that, they're losing this coverage that mm-hmm. we're talking about today.
Mm-hmm. So you want to ask questions. If you have a broker, you want to ask questions.
You want to ask questions. And the thing about the umbrella policy is very interesting because when people buy an umbrella coverage policy, they think, oh, well, it's umbrella. I'm covered for anything.
That's what I thought. And I've been a lawyer for a long time. Yep. So hey, I blew it on that myself. Okay. Let alone people who are not lawyers. And insurance policies, frankly, are very difficult to read.
That is not
whether you're a lawyer or not. They are
terribly
difficult to read. And frankly, although I think it's wise that someone try to read their insurance policy, I'm not sure that they would understand it. And please, I'm not speaking down to you, everybody. I am not at all. They are very difficult to read and understand for everybody. All right. I want to give you the phone number in case you have an insurance question or a personal injury question, personal injury accident question. The number 1415-841-4134. 1415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program focusing at least initially on the importance of having adequate uninsured and underinsured motorist insurance coverage, which is to protect you if you're in an accident and you get injured and it's the fault of someone else. And so my guests are both experienced personal injury attorneys, Shahana Angela Rahman and Casey Kaufman. Their offices are in San Francisco. And I'm getting questions that are coming into the studio, and I'm looking forward to having you, those of you who want to talk on the air. But let me ask you some questions here that have been brought into the studio. I have uninsured motorist coverage. I parked my car one day and came back to find a big dent in my car. It was a hit and run. My insurance company refused to cover the damage. When does uninsured motorist coverage apply?
Well, in that sort of situation, the coverage that would apply would be the coverage that if you have coverage covering damage to your own property.
That's collision?
That's collision coverage. Right. And so underinsured motorist coverage covers bodily injury.
Yes.
That's when it comes into play.
Okay. So whoever posed this question, you might go back and say to the insurance company, and there may have been a big deductible on the collision. That may be the problem, because sometimes you do have the choice of either having a smaller deductible or a larger deductible, and that may have been the case in this instance, but you want to find out if you had collision coverage. Now, here's another question. A motorist is driving his friend's car. The friend is riding as a passenger. He has minimum liability insurance. There is a crash, and the passenger dies, while the driver, who is insured, survives and tests positive on the DUI scale. What is the driver's liability? Is he covered by the friend's insurance? How's this? This sounds
almost like a bar exam.
This sounds like a state bar exam. You want to look at that?
Let me just take a look at this. This is a good one.
Yeah. and the dog was driving, by the way. And the dog was driving the car.
So what happens if you're driving your friend's car and you have... You, the driver, have a policy of insurance, and your friend, the owner of the car, has a policy of insurance. There are two policies that are in play, basically, for recovery. Yeah. So if one has a minimum limits policy, then you go to the second policy. So there are two policies at all times.
Okay.
There. And if there's a DUI...
driving under the influence.
Driving under the influence, then unfortunately there is an aspect of this where there would be punitive damages for driving under the influence in a civil case.
Which is not covered by insurance.
Exactly. That's exactly where I was going. So it doesn't... But the insurance companies will pay to compensate the driver up to the limits of the two policies, and they sort of separate punitive damages for the driving under the influence and say, well, that's not our responsibility, the insurance company, that's you, the driver's personal responsibility.
Because I think in the policy, generally speaking, and tell me if I'm incorrect on this, I think the policies generally explain that this insurance coverage does not cover for punitive damages or punishment type of damage. That's what punitive means in the insurance area.
That's correct. And intentional acts.
An intentional act.
Right. Both of those things.
Here's another one. So if the dog was driving, what do we do with the dog on this one?
If the dog was driving, we just wrap it up right now.
Yeah, wrap it up. Okay. All right. Okay. And the reason I'm making fun like this is that some of the information I've gotten recently from someone who took the state bar exam, which ended last Thursday, is that there were some questions very convoluted, such as nearly as if the dog had been driving the car. But in any event, and I'll probably hear from the state bar on this one, I suppose. There are so many insurance brokers out there. Some are better than others. Is there a review source similar to Yelp that can guide motorists to the best insurance brokers?
See, the problem with brokers is that many of them are technically in-house. Like, you can be a broker for Farmers or a broker for State Farm. And while they are very knowledgeable about the products they offer, they may not be very knowledgeable or informative about anything else. You know, frankly, I would just look for a broker that that is not tied to one company. I would look for people for personal references if you can. I don't know of any site other than Yelp. I was going to say Yelp until you mentioned that. Unfortunately, not that I know of. Do you?
I don't know of any source like that. And most brokers are tied to one company nowadays, unless you get, if you're looking for, there are brokers who will do all kinds of insurance for, and that's actually the best because then they can vet price for you on a multiple levels, which is great. I tell people, if you want to hire a broker, you want to go that route, talk to them. You want to hire, just like anything else, you want to hire someone who answers your questions, who listens to you, and who you trust.
Do your homework.
Do your homework.
Like any other area of the law that I try to impress upon the listeners to this program, try to educate yourself as best you can. And there are various ways of doing it. Usually with the topics that we do on this program, I refer people to the county lawyer referral services of the county bar associations for at least an initial consultation. I'm not sure if that's something that I would recommend with regard to insurance, but maybe on the other hand, there are attorneys who are members of the local bar associations who are personal injury attorneys who are maybe also defense attorneys working for law firms that are representing insurance companies, and maybe that is another way to have a half an hour consultation paid, depending on the county, for half an hour, $25 low or maybe $35 high, which most counties have, and get some basic information. Let's do this. Let's take a couple of calls right now. Steve, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The dog is driving, I'm either going to call CHP, the DMV, or the SPCA, not necessarily in that order.
Call all three.
Couple of quick questions, Steve.
Yeah.
This is a great topic, and especially in this time. There's a lot of people in this area who do not own cars and just use public transit or their own 2 feet. So would you please address that as an issue? And then also as far as rental cars, how this would apply or not apply. And just to give us an idea, are we talking maybe $1,000 a year or a couple $100 a year? What's the kind of ballpark that we're talking about?
You mean to increase your uninsured coverage?
Or to get it.
Not, okay. All right.
Thank you.
Good, Steve. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Do you have any comments about this? What is it to get, get some significant uninsured motorist coverage? What would you say the ballpark may be?
Well, you know, that's actually, I was going to say that that's a really hard question to answer because there are so many other factors that are involved, like the age of the driver, the record of the driver, their accident history, you know, and that just goes back to, I think, the general theme, which is, you know, you're going to be your best advocate in this situation.
Yes.
Make calls. Ask questions. If you're not satisfied, call somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong there. I do want to address, though,
please,
what Steve said about the pedestrian. This does cover. If you are hit by a car and you are a pedestrian, your UIM coverage will be implicated. So you're protected.
Assuming you, pedestrian, are the owner of a car and you have uninsured coverage.
You know, I think you just have to be licensed. I don't even think you have to own a car to have coverage.
Oh, okay. Right. As long as you have coverage.
Sure.
And as long as you're licensed and have coverage.
Sure. And, you know, for pedestrians, particularly in the Bay Area and San Francisco, that's a pretty big safety issue. And as far as rental cars are concerned, that was one of the big questions for me personally. I made sure to ask my insurance company whether or not I have the same coverage if I'm in a rental car, and I made sure to pick one that I did.
All right. It is 728 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KOW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We started off with the importance of having adequate uninsured and underinsured motorist insurance coverage. If you have questions that go beyond that in the area of insurance coverage or accidents or liability for driving cars or being a pedestrian or riding a bike or being hit by a bus or whatever it may be in terms of accidents, please join us, 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. My guests are personal injury attorneys Casey Kaufman of the Brandy Law Firm in San Francisco, and Shahana Angela Rahman, who has her offices in San Francisco. And so I would urge you to call in, ask a question, make a comment. So coming back to Steve's point about rental cars, if you have your own, if you own a car, you have a license, you own a car, you have your own liability policy, and you rent a car, your policy can be involved if you're in an accident and you cause injury to someone else. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
It does sometimes depend on the policy.
Right. That's what I ended with, is that it really is that is something that can really vary.
You want to call your insurance company, say I've got to rent a car. Will my policy, if I rent this car, cover me? From the liability standpoint, will it cover me from the uninsured motorist standpoint, et cetera?
Exactly.
Okay.
But you also, and I hate to say this, but if your broker tells you the answer to that question is yes, you're covered, and turns out your broker gives you wrong information, that's a tough one. Brokers do have certain responsibilities to you, but I tell people you should read your policy.
Yes.
And there
is
a portion of your policy which deals with rental cars or cars, your coverage when you're not driving your own car.
My practice has always been, and I haven't rented a car in a long time, but I always felt it was important, although I've had significant liability coverage for a long time with a major carrier. I've always felt when I rented a car that I wanted to get coverage through the rental car company. What do you feel about that, Casey?
You know, I don't, because I was satisfied with what my policy said.
All right. Okay.
But now you're going to go back and read your policy, aren't you, Casey?
Don't tell me you didn't read that policy. Okay.
I didn't read it. I didn't read it today. So maybe I'll double check.
Yeah, we got him. We got him, folks. We got him on that one. Let me just mention something. I have not mentioned this to you before, but this is a feature that you may be interested in the landlord-tenant clinic area. And we're not going to have any landlord-tenant questions for my guests. I already teased them about that, as I usually do with people who are lawyers who don't practice landlord-tenant. I tell Martin, who helps me on the program, not too many landlord-tenant questions. But what I want you to know about is that the San Mateo Superior Court, in conjunction with the Legal Aid Society of San Mateo County, the Legal Aid Society of San Mateo County, I've had guests on the program from that organization. Every Monday, except court holidays, from 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., we'll have a landlord-tenant clinic, and you are invited. You need to check in. This is at the Hall of Justice in Redwood City, 400 County Center in Redwood City on the second floor. You check in with the Family Law Facilitator's Office, which is on the second floor, and you'll get a number or whatever. And it's first come, first served. But this is a very nice opportunity that both the Superior Court and the Legal Aid Society make available to you, whether you're a landlord and a tenant, if you have questions about your rights, responsibilities, et cetera. And I wanted you to know about that. Okay, Dave, welcome to your legal rights.
Hi.
Hi.
First of all, to begin with, I should say that before I get to my main question, it's not clear to me, or hasn't been made clear to me yet, what the difference is between uninsured motorists and underinsured motorist coverage.
Let me get that for you, Dave, right now, and then we'll get to your question. Casey, make the distinction, if you would.
Uninsured is if the person does not have insurance.
The other party who hit you doesn't
exactly.
have insurance.
You're in an auto accident. The person that hit you, it was their fault. They don't have insurance, period. Underinsured is if they do have insurance, but it is not enough to cover your injuries or your damages.
Okay, it's just the obvious thing.
Yeah,
I thought there might be some tricky decision.
No. There are enough tricks in the law, but that was not a trick. That was not a trick area. Go ahead, Dave.
It turns out that my problem is sort of something that sounds like a trick.
Mm.
What happens is I was hit rear-ended by somebody who drove away. It was hit and run. There was no question about the fact that I was hit. Okay. And I thought that since I didn't have a specific person who had insurance whom I could say was the person who had hit me, that I would be able to get something for uninsured motorist coverage, which I had. But I was told that that was not the case. And in order to get something from uninsured motorist coverage, I would have to know who the driver was and be able to prove that that driver was an uninsured person.
Yeah.
That's not totally accurate. In order to recover in a hit-and-run situation, the insurance code, the law that covers this, is very specific. One thing is you can file a police report. So if there's a police report made in a very short time period, a 24-hour time period, then that police report, even if the police do not find the person who hit you, will be sufficient to trigger your coverage from your insurance company. But it's a very short window of time. In the other instance,
and the police were there also.
Really?
Did they make a
But no, I didn't ask them to file a report because I didn't know that I should ask them to.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had, then I would have been eligible.
That's correct.
Wow. But otherwise, what I told you my insurance agent said is apparently correct. You have to have the specific driver and prove that they're not insured.
You don't have to have the specific driver if you have that police report. So the police are there and they make a report that there's a hit and run.
But even absent the police report,
absent the police report, you do need the information about the driver. So because your insurance company is entitled to proof that the person who hit you had no insurance.
And you did not, Dave, when this person hit you, you were not able to get the license number of the vehicle?
No, they hit me so hard that my glasses got knocked off.
Wow. That's incredible.
But I have had cases where a passerby has gotten a license plate, that's enough, and you can run that license plate and find the information on the person that way.
Well, Dave, thank you very much for calling.
Okay.
Sorry we couldn't help.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, take care. 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. By the way, we will have our next Call the Lawyer night on Wednesday, August 28th, so you might want to put that on your calendar where you can talk with any one of a number of attorneys who are in the conference room here at KALW off the air. No obligation whatsoever between 7 to 8 p.m. while I'm doing a regular on-air program. That's Call a Lawyer Night on August 28th. Okay, let's see. We have Michelle. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. I have a question that I didn't understand that was asked at the top of the hour, and it's specifically where agents don't want to tell me because it doesn't help them in money. But, again, how does my $1 million umbrella cover my auto uninsured or underinsured insurance? Right now, I have bodily injury of $500,000, and uninsured motorist $500,000. But you were talking about a $5 million umbrella and how one covers the other and one has a lower premium, and I'm lost.
Well, you're not the only person. I have, Michelle, a $5 million umbrella. And that umbrella was to expand my protection in the event that I hit somebody else and really injured them in very significantly. It increased my liability coverage as far as another injured person or persons. I have found out today from my insurance carrier, as well as my guests here, that the umbrella that I have under my policy did not protect me with respect to my uninsured motorist coverage or my underinsured motorist coverage in the event that I was injured by someone else's fault. So can you, both of you, kind of respond to what Michelle's concerns are? She's got a $1 million umbrella. What do you know, Michelle, you mentioned something about uninsured coverage. What's your uninsured coverage amounts?
My uninsured motorist bodily injury is $500,000 each, current.
Okay. All right. That's pretty good. What comments do you have for her?
Sure. Well, Michelle, you should ask your insurance company, your broker, if your umbrella policy actually has an automobile rider with underinsured or uninsured motorist coverage on it, because you have to buy that extra rider for it to be effective with your umbrella policy. That's the first thing.
But apparently that, Michelle, as I am learning, a unique type of thing that not every company has. So you have to ask your own agent for your own insurance policy. Go ahead.
And some policies, actually, the umbrellas will come with that rider. They don't call it a rider, but that's very, very rare where a company has it as a part of the umbrella package. But you do have to ask for it specifically, and it's separate, and there's a separate payment for it.
Right, and this is just another example of how you really need to ask the question.
Right.
And I would just suggest that you be direct and say, does it have it? Tell me where.
Yeah, where is it in my policy?
Exactly.
Point it out to me. What number is it, or what paragraph is it on what page?
Right, that's it'll be clear once it's pointed out, and then you can rest easy.
And you know, Michelle, I think what is important here, because essentially all businesses today use the internet in sending back emails. I think it's not only good to talk with someone on the phone, but also to put it into writing. Put your question, your comment, or your confirmation to your agent in writing back to them saying, do I understand correctly that this is what you have told me my policy will cover me for? And ask them to confirm that in writing.
Excellent. I didn't think of that.
Yeah, no, I think it's very important, frankly. And hold on to that. You know, keep it, because if they're wrong, if they sometime down the road say no, then you may have a nice action against your own insurance agent and therefore the company itself.
So you're saying an umbrella rider is cheaper than increasing any kind of bodily injury liabilities on the auto insurance policy?
The riders on an umbrella, and obviously we don't work for insurance companies, yeah. but they tend to be less expensive than increasing your coverages on the underlying policy, on your first.
But you want to ask those questions, Michelle.
Yes. Ask those questions.
You want to ask those questions, yeah. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. We're talking about insurance issues. We're talking about accidents. We're talking about people getting injured. We're talking about the liability one has to someone else if you've caused the accident or vice versa. And we've got another Michelle. Michelle, number two, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
All right, so my question is very Bay Area-centric about casual carpool. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but do I need to give more detail on it?
Yeah, I'd like to hear a little bit more, please.
Okay, so casual carpool is something here in the East Bay mostly where we pick people up at preset spots
and
drive into the city, drive across the bridge. And generally it's two people, although sometimes when it's really busy, we'll take three people. For a while, people were saying, oh, I'll only take two people because I'm told that my insurance coverage won't cover if there are more than two people in the car.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I wanted to see if, first of all, if that's true, and second of all, what I should look out for as a casual carpool driver, what should I make sure my insurance covers?
And what does this do for you by picking up these people? What does it do for you? Do you charge somebody to get in your car with you, or are you reimbursed to some degree by your employer for doing this, or how does this actually work?
Well, basically, you get to use the HOV lane. You get to use the carpool lane and go across the bridge. You get a reduced bridge toll.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And generally, it is custom to, like, you know, some people will give you, like, a buck.
I see. I gotcha. Okay. Well, what comments, Shahana, do you have on this one?
Sure. At first, I recommend that people doing casual carpool do not take any sort of remuneration, no money from it, because mm-hmm. every auto policy has an exclusion which says if you are a livery vehicle, meaning you're taking Ooh. Some money like a cab or the new Lyft drivers out there with the mustaches, that sort of thing can make your coverage disappear.
Really?
So you're taking money, and there are a lot of factors to that. But as a general
But that is not to say that if you voluntarily pick up someone who is not going to pay you for this, but you're doing this because it puts you in the lane and you can get across the bridge faster or wherever, that will not affect, as far as you know, your coverage.
So far.
So far, so good. Huh?
They change every minute with the new things.
Never a dull moment.
I will say, if you are a driver in the casual carpool, you should have good insurance because in the unfortunate event you're in a collision and your passenger, the people you've picked up, are injured, you could be sued.
Yes.
There could be a claim made. So you should have good coverage and up-to-date coverage. The other thing is that you mentioned that some people are saying they can't carry more than two people because there's no insurance coverage for that. I've never seen that in an insurance policy. So unless it's something brand new, that's probably just an excuse.
I've never seen that either.
Yeah, it was years ago, so it's definitely not something new. Yeah. So.
Okay, all right.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Michelle. Glad you called. All right, Matthew, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my call. I really have a question regarding the kind of correlation between somebody's net worth and the amount of coverage that they need. And I'll just give you an example. You know, most of us, even if we have a house, don't have all that much equity in it. But let's say our net worth with our houses and other assets are in the $300,000 range. And I'm just wondering why or under what circumstances it could ever make sense to purchase insurance that exceeds what your net worth is. Because even if you, God forbid, some harm or damage while operating a vehicle, your policy would pay the maximum coverage, and if you were sued or whatever, you could probably discharge the judgment in bankruptcy anyway.
Well, you know, the issue that you're talking about your net worth and if you're sued, goes to the question and coverage of bodily injury. The reason you'd want to get more coverage in bodily injury is to enable to protect yourself with UM/UIM coverage, which is what we're that's the coverage we're talking about today. And usually you need to have at least as high a bodily injury level as the UM/UIM coverage that you have. And so in those situation, in the situation where it's somebody else's fault and you're severely injured, that's why you would want more.
I didn't realize we were just restricted to the UI or UIM coverage.
Oh, no, I just, that's one reason. The other reason, you know, you want to make it clear that your assets are covered. If you feel that that your coverage is an attractive enough target versus you personally, then it's probably sufficient.
I often, people ask me this question all the time, how much coverage should I have? And what I tell people is, I tell them to envision the worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. And that is you kill somebody or a family, you know, a family of four. It's an accident, but that's sometimes what happens. And you can be pursued personally. And you're right. A lot of these, if you are pursued personally above your policy limit, and there is a judgment against you, so oftentimes that can be discharged in bankruptcy. But that's a long process for you. And I find people who are involved in those sorts of circumstances, they have a lot of guilt towards what happened, and it comes back at the back end. So envision the worst case scenario and what you feel comfortable with. But a judgment not discharged in bankruptcy is good for 10 years to the person who gets it and can be renewed for another 10 years and another 10 years. So especially for young drivers, those sorts of judgments can follow them around. They're not discharged in bankruptcy, and not all judgments can be discharged in bankruptcy.
I guess, yeah, my only thrust of my question was that oftentimes we're kind of sold more insurance than we really need from fear. I mean, no one wants to intentionally harm anyone, but I think that was my only question in terms of how do you evaluate your coverage needs. And they would change. If your net worth increases, you think you would get more coverage.
Well, thank you very much, Matthew, for calling. My concern about this, frankly, in getting coverage beyond, let's say, as your example, Matthew, of your net worth is $300,000, I would not want to have a small amount of coverage that would not protect me. I mean, if you have a home and the equity in your home is only $300,000, I mean, that's a lot of equity. I would hate to be in a situation where I would be sued over that, or I would have to file bankruptcy, which may not really relieve you. I mean, you'd really want to find out from a bankruptcy attorney how much risk you are willing to take. I wouldn't want to jeopardize the equity in my home, frankly, by not having significant coverage in the event that I was the person who had caused someone else to have a very serious injury or death. So thank you very much for calling. All right, Sandra, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you. So my question is, I was hit rear-ended when driving a friend's car. The car isn't insured, and I got the police report already. That this was like 2 weeks ago. I got the police report. It says that the other person was violating, like I think, like speeding or something, and cell phone use involved. So I was hit in my head. I have a huge bump, and I haven't been able to work since then. And then my friend's agent from the insurance says that the laws in California don't cover the loss of income. And I feel like I don't even know how to start.
I don't think that's correct. I don't think that's correct, Sandra. What city are you in, or county?
I'm in San Francisco.
Yeah. Let me mention this to you. You've lost time at work?
Yes.
And are you saying that the other driver is the one who is at fault?
Yes, it's his fault.
And did he, I'm not sure about this, does he have any insurance?
Yes, he has an insurance as well.
Okay. You know, I think what you should do is contact the lawyer referral service. I'm going to give a little little information about this. I think you need to meet with an attorney who represents people involved in accident cases for a half an hour consultation at least to find out what your basic rights are. This idea where someone is telling you it doesn't cover loss of income, that makes no sense whatsoever. So if you're ready to write, hang up your phone if you don't mind, and I'm going to give you some information on this and a call, because I think this is what you should do to find out, because I think you've been given misinformation.
Okay.
And here is the number I want you to write down, so get ready to write. Hang up. Keep your radio volume up. 415.
Okay.
Hang up your phone, if you would. I want you to listen to this on the radio. 415-989-1616. And I'm going to repeat it again in just a minute. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. I want to tell you, and I think I have many times, that the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association is one of the funders of this program. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KALW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. You should be able to get a human being on the phone. Tell them what the problem is, and they'll do their best in finding someone who's experienced for you for a half-an-hour consultation. The money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the Bar Association as a public service. Depending on the county, half an hour may be a low of $25 or maybe a high of $35. It's a great investment in getting some basic information. And here's another caller who... A question came into the studio, and this is what the caller suggests, but this is not a question, a suggestion. Though the person may not have spoken, and this relates to, I think, Dave, who called in earlier in the program. Though Dave may not have spoken with the officers at the scene of his injury by the hit-and-run driver, nonetheless, there may have been a report filed, and he can inquire with the precinct desk officer. So that's something, Dave, that you might want to do, according to at least what this caller suggested. Certainly it's worth it for you to call the police department precinct and find out if some report had been taken with respect to the rear ender that you were hit with. Now, we have a few minutes left. If anybody has another call, a question, or whatever, the number is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. In the remaining few minutes that we have, do you have some other thoughts that you want to impart or suggest to us, Casey?
That's a pretty open question.
It is. You're darn right it is, yeah.
Well, you know, the reason that Shahan and I wanted to do this program was because we've had to give too many people that came into our office that were badly injured the news that justice wasn't available to them for one reason or another, and that they had unknowingly made a choice to not protect themselves. And I just have to – I know we've said it a number of times. It's just the most important thing here is, you know, you don't have an advocate better than yourself. And I just think that asking questions, pointed questions to protect yourself is essential, particularly in this avenue. And I would just say that if you get on the phone with your insurance broker or the company, you just call up and ask, price out different coverages. And if you're in a position, I would get the highest one that you can afford to protect yourself.
One of the things that I think most of us fail to do is to actually read our insurance policies. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. If someone has the time and the gumption to do it, I certainly would suggest reading it. And as you read it and find you don't understand certain things in your policy, I would write down what you don't understand and then call your agent or call a company and ask, what does this mean? Try to find out what it is. That's the kind of homework that I think we need to do. But, you know, when the statistic is that 25% of people driving on our California streets and highways are uninsured, this is pretty serious stuff. And that's one of the reasons that I agreed when Casey suggested that we do this program, that we do it, because it's very important that people understand this. And I myself, in looking at my policy and my uninsured motorist coverage and underinsured motorist coverage, realized that although I had this big umbrella that might protect me in case I hurt someone else, but would not protect me in case someone hurt me or whoever else may be in my car. So that's one of the things. And we've got Mark. Mark, welcome to Your Legal Rights. We've got about half a minute if you can do it.
Oh, yes, thank you. Hey, I was involved in a motorcycle accident recently, and the person had hit me head-on, and there was a great deal of waiting to find out with my attorney if, you know, what kind of policy that the guy had. And so he did have, fortunately, a $250,000 policy, but, you know, he could have had, what I understand is the minimum, is a $15,000-$30,000 policy. And
right.
I wanted to ask you folks, how can the insurance agencies get away with, say, a young person that wants to get, needs to get insurance for his car, and just says, well, I want $15,000-$30,000, and that doesn't even cover, you know, you getting taken to the hospital, spending 2-3 hours in the hospital after you get hit and you're discharged. That's $15,000 right there.
It's an old legal requirement of California law, unfortunately, Mark, that has not followed as inflation and the cost of living and the cost of hospitalization and doctors have increased. Unfortunately, it really, I think the practicality is it's an old law. It is something that should be changed. It hasn't. Our legislature has not focused on that. So I thank you for bringing that to our attention, but that's the practicality of it, unfortunately. Well, I want to thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you.
On
thank
Your
you.
Legal Rights. It's been enlightening, and I hope people will take what you have said and do some research on their own. I want to thank both of you, Casey Kaufman of the Brandy Law Firm in San Francisco, and Shahana Angela Raman of your own office in San Francisco for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Your Legal Rights production staff members are Joanne Marr, who is the does our announcing and our operating, keeps us on the air. She is our program engineer. The production assistant is Martin McLean. And funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, by the California Applicants Attorneys Association, by the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, we're going to be talking about immigration law, an update of immigration and nationality law, reform and issues. We're going to talk about the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in the DOMA case, that's the Defense of Marriage Act, and what that means in terms of immigration for same-sex couples. So join me. My guests will be certified specialists Mary Waltermeyer and Kelly McCown. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.